Station number 16717, John Everett, rail 8.
Mr. Everett, rail 8. You met this German Foreign Legion person in the hospital. How were they treating him? I mean, he was a German that had been in effect in the French army.
That's correct. Well, he was taken prisoner, like us, you know what I mean? But I don't know. He was told me what actually happened to him, because it was an American soldier that threw a grenade at him, and his testicles was full of shrapnel, and that's what he was in there for. But his self-like was right, and I was, you know what I mean?
Were you well treated in the hospital?
You got treated better in the hospital than you did in the compound, put it that way. You know, they tried to put things a bit better for you. But they never had much medical to give you.
What did they give you?
I was given some tablets, and I was passing blood, passing both ways. Well, what was worrying me more than anything, my weight was going down. I went to about 6 stone, you know, a lot of weight to lose. And I was going like a week. And then he said it was yellow jaundice. I turned yellow, and all he could have been involved with stomach and all that. And then I started picking up a bit after that. They started stuff out of the Red Cross parcel, and this fellow was swapping him. He said, get that down here, you know, skim milk and all. And I picked up, and then I got sent back into the compound. And in a compound, there was a lot of activity in a compound. We put our own NSAS shows on different parties, because a big camp, I reckon there was about 6,000 in it. That's how big a camp it was. And next camp to us was a German camp. They were looking after them. They were Americans. The Germans look after them. And what we got told, they got more for an American than they would for a British soldier. And they were Germans. Got wise, as it were. They know all the rules, as it was. But in that camp, there was plenty of activity to pass your mind away. But the lice was terrible. You got the louse maybe once, couple of weeks. And in the morning, you take your vest off and pick them off. Lice crawling all over you. And they used to turn the taps. I forget now where. These trough taps, you know, what do they call them in this country, where they put them, when they're shorted of water, they put them in the streets. Well, they had one of them in a camp, and they only turned them on for an hour. And there's a few thousand men want some water in an hour, so you can expect what it's like. And the toilets down the bottom was only just a hole in the ground. Sometimes you went there in the morning, might be a lad, two lads there laid dead there. Died. Not on top of that, like different people, RSM Burgess, he was the camp commandant of the 66 camp. I remember his name, RSM Burgess. He was out of the Cheshire Regiment. He was telling us his experience in the camp to pass days away, like you, anybody had some experience to say. He was in LRDG, Long Range Desert Group, and he was dressed as an Arab when he got caught, and he was sentenced to death. And with our troops advancing, somebody managed to get in my uniform, and with him have to move forward, and that's how we got out of it, he was telling us. Another fellow, he was shot down, he was an airman. The last words he remembered to bail out when they were invading Sicily, because we went far from Sicily, Capua, and he was telling the experience, he got told to bail out, And he just remember bailing out. Skipper told him, bail out, we've been hit, we're on fire. And he was picked up, and he had no shoe down when he got picked up. You know, people telling you different tales, like, you know what I mean? That's when they moved us, when our lads...
How long were you there?
Well, I couldn't tell you the exact time, maybe 6 months, 8 months, I don't know.
What were you feeding on? Other than the Red Cross parcels, what was the basic food you were getting?
Cabbage stalks and two or three macaroni floating in it. That was your very near regular meal. It was like hot water. That's all you got on a little panny. Well, we used to bargain with the sentries. If you got caught, you got into trouble over it. With the Red Cross stuff, what we used to do, you had a 2 ounce packet of tea. We'd use the tea up, dry it up, put it back in a bag, half full, and put half full of dirt on, and the fresh packet, put a fresh packet on top, seal it up, do it panny, two pannies, show him the tea, throw him the tea over, and he'd smell it, and then he'd throw you two pannies over, and it was all... We used to do the same with everything.
What did you get in a Red Cross parcel? You mentioned tea, you mentioned milk.
You got a little tin of meat, but all like 2 ounces, and you got some packet of cigarettes, different meats. And you, like, you didn't like so-and-so, you used to swap them round, or bread was more important than anything. And we used to make our own little stoves out of old cans and everything, brew up. You know what I mean? To go in detail, I know you can't recall everything, but the parcels from different parts of the country, one, you know, all depends what part of the country was. But you had porridge, I told you, in a Scottish part, and you could make porridge, you know, with the water. That was good because you had a bit of milk. And you had that Nestles, little tin of Nestles in some of them. It was different stuff. And was it one? There was packet of biscuits, small packet of biscuits, and it was all made up, and it was between two. Well, actually, they kept them for themselves in the end.
They dried up, did they? They weren't coming, they didn't get very many.
Well, what actually we were told, they were keeping them for themselves. But you know what I mean? Say now they'd been bombed and tell it all sort, because there was an air base, you could see it. Italian air base, and our aircraft used to bomb it. We used to cheer in the night time, they're coming over, and they used to put all the lights out. Well, that, to me, that was going against the Geneva Conventions. They should keep the lights on, but I reckon they used to guide our planes. They knew where the camps were, you know what I mean? But they used to, as soon as the airhead warning and the lights went out, then all the lads used to get out of the huts, then what was all right, get in the pit, shot cans and all sorts, and the sentries threw the fire over the camp. There was one lad one day going to get deloused, and the gates were open. They had these, like, big tubs. Everybody threw their clothes in there and tried to get him deloused, and this lad just walked out. We challenged him three times, wouldn't stop, shot him. Yeah. And there was another lad in that camp, I don't remember his name, from 66 camp. He escaped from that camp because they fetched him back. And he got from Capua, if you have a look at the map, it must be about 300 or 400 miles away. He got as far as Milan. And how he got picked up, he walked in the ladies instead of the gentlemen. And the policeman, Cabineri, seen him coming out and he pulled him up. He couldn't speak Italian. They took his boots off, he walking about in bare feet. Yeah.
Did you think of escaping?
Well, you did and you didn't. You went as far as the tripwire and looking. That was man, machine, and all, you know, different. And there was a tripwire. If you stepped over that, could be shot, you know. But there was escape from that camp. We before we got into that camp. And they composed a song about it, Campo PG-66, they called us. And Campo PG-66, seldom you ever see a Frau. There's English, there's Irish, there's good old Welshman too, and the Scots lads that never let you down. In Campo Concentramento, PG-66, there's blacks, there's whites, but never bluer. But they didn't. There's blacks, there's whites, but never bluer. Soon they come a day when they'll all escape away from Campo Concentramento, PG-66. Now we often hear the fellows complain about the lice. Now this old Dickie Bird, he says, the biggest three blind mice, they're up your belly, down your spine, they never get no fewer. But they didn't stop the boys that night from escaping through the sewer. Yeah. They composed that, they made a song of it in a camp. Well, them lads, they all went down the sewer, up to there in next, and as they got out, they reckon there was about 40 or 50 of them, as they got out, the Germans was waiting for them.
The Germans
were waiting for them as they come out. They fetched them back in the camp and everybody chased them away. Yeah, well, we just got in after that happened.
Was there a big black market going on in the camp?
Well, there was and there wasn't in that particular camp. There wasn't in the other camp there was when we got moved.
Now, this is the first one, PG-66.
The first one, no, not to my knowledge, you know. There was a lot of Arabs in that camp, Moroccans in that camp, and they were in a hut on their own. What I tried to tell you before, that they used to have boxing, used to play rugby, you know, like into games, past the time, and all their officers used to be over the moon watching. They were getting more friendly and friendly every day, but apparently RSM Burgess, this officer, he was our camp commandant, because the officers were none the next. There was no officers allowed in our camp. And according to him, this officer was all right with him, you know what I mean? He got information off him, I don't know, but that's what they called him. So I don't know if you ever come across anybody else who was in that camp. RSM Burgess, he was out of Cheshire Regiment. But we used to get some information. We got information when they invaded Sicily, because they fetched some glider troops in. We were all big lads, they were, and they were going mad about the Americans. Cast them off because they were under, and they cast them off in the water, in the sea, and they got picked up. And they were prisoners there then. Yeah, the artillery was that heavy, you know, the barrage when they were invading Sicily, then these glider troops, and the Americans were towing them. They cast them off. They cast them off, stayed on land, they cast them off in the water, Naples.
Did you have a roll call every morning?
Counted you twice a day in that camp. Twice a day they counted you. Counted you one by one into a compound. Oh. Took about an hour, 2 hours sometimes. One counting that side, one counting this side, you know. And they fetched another lad while I was in that camp. And everybody that knew him used to be sorry for him, because they were taking him out and interrogating him every day. He was the sole survivor of a destroyer. And she was torpedoed outside Tripoli. And he was only 18 years old. And in the compound, when he used to get counted with us, but they used to take him away, and he'd gone to look bad. Everybody was sorry for him. On the compound, it was like whitewash, and he made drew a roll of honour, and he was just putting the names of all the crew that was aboard ship, and he was saying how he survived. He was on watch, and he still had the oilskin and everything, and she was hit, and he got picked up off a German, the one that hit a German submarine, and they transferred him over to our camp. So I don't know what they called him. He was a naval, and the only survivor he was. He wouldn't tell us the name of the ship. They were trying to get it out of him. He wouldn't tell them. But he could see they were wearing him down, but I don't know exactly what happened to him.
Was there any trouble in the camp, fastened in all day, and men losing their tempers and becoming frayed?
Oh, you got that, you know. You got scuffles in the barrack room, somebody losing his temper, this and that. Yeah, you did get that, scuffles, you know, amongst each other. Different races, you know, and he did get scuffles, but some of you weren't strong to fight that week, you know what I mean. But I tell you what he did get in the camp, and you might not believe this, there's some of them, they were like man and wife walking about arm in arm around the camp. You got all that going on in the camp, so. And they used to say, like they do today, oh, they're two puffs or something like that, you know what I mean. But he did got that. They were walking about like man and wife around the camp. But we had our shows there, and they used to get dressed up in ENSA, you know, put in entertainment on to pass. You had all sorts in the camp itself, amongst yourselves, you know what I mean.
Red Cross, did they come into the camp?
Never seen anybody, no.
You were never inspected?
Oh, never seen any Red Cross people, no. I didn't, any of it.
In addition to the parcels that you got, the food parcels, did the Red Cross send you any games equipment or books or anything of that nature?
Not to my knowledge, no. Not to my knowledge, no. This, the only thing, what I've told you, we had plenty of recreation, what we done ourselves. The only thing we couldn't get wood for our fires to do stuff, and we used to tear bits off the bunks. In the end, there was no bunks left. Everybody, you'd have to watch your bunk, whatever you were in. On my, the lad on my bunk, I don't know what, I forget what he was, he wasn't out of Durham's, but he was a Welsh lad in this camp, and he belonged to Carnarvon. That's where he belonged, and I used to share my parcel with him, and we wrote a card. When I, after coming over, in Welsh, he wrote it. We'll tell him what the conditions are. And he did, and he wrote it, and he got through. And he wrote it in the Welsh language, he did. Yeah, and it's happened again, apparently, but Royal Welsh Fusiliers is from there in Bosnia, communicating to each other, instead of Morse, in Welsh. That's where we've seen it on there, but we've done that in that prison camp. And that particular lad, he died in the camp. And he was married. He gave me a photo of his wife and two kids. And unknown to me, his mother used to attend Red Cross meetings in this country. And my mum used to be there, and they used to talk to each other about it. That was unknown. But when I got home, and my mum said, well, I know his mum, and his address was on. And I sent them his photo, and his wife, she was a widow then, she wanted me to go to Carnarvon, and she wanted to know more about him. I never actually got there.
What did he die of?
Sugar diabetes, I think. No treatment.
Were you concerned about your parents knowing that you're probably missing, or didn't know what had happened to you?
Well, I was... You kept thinking about him, you know what I mean? Because my mother, according to what I was told, she was to buy not one, but 10 papers a day. What paper she to see if there's any news? And my dad, a military fella, naval man, he was looking at the map, and no sign. He thought I'd had it, like. He was going by military with where we were, and he'd been overrun and all that, still no word. That's the word she got, that I was wounded and taken prisoner.
How did she get her information? Was it through the official channels or the Pope's Radio Vatican? How did the first information get to her that you were safe?
to my parents, you mean? I couldn't tell you.
Was the stealing going on amongst the people in the camp?
Well, actually, we know to steal, put it that way. But I tell you what they did do in that camp with me, and a few more. I had a ring on my finger. I took that off us, and it was, and on the inside, it was passed on. And on the inside of the ring, engraved, it was solid gold, "Always remember your mum." That was engraved on the inside. They took that, took me watch, took everything. Everything had any value, they took it off you. I mean, they actually did that in the camps, they weren't supposed to, but they did.
Did you get any work in this camp, in this first camp?
If you're fit enough, you wanted to go to work, yes. I wouldn't go like I was, but I wouldn't go if I, then after they invaded Sicily, I told you, everybody said we were getting moved, and then we got moved by transport again, I think, I'm not sure was it by rail or trucks now, and we got moved to central Italy on account because our troops were near and that camp pretty near. And they moved us to Macerata.
What number was this?
53, 53, yeah. 53. Moved us there.
And what was this camp like?
That camp was worse than the other camp. And in charge of this camp was an officer. But he was a medical officer, captain, I think he was. He was a medical officer. He was the camp commandant in there. We were on the outside. We went in on like a compound. Bivouacs, we were there, overlooking a big, like, square, all about where. One night, one of the lads went down and had a wet. He was dead the morning. He shot him because he put his sweat over the subway. We all went the next night. We were belting all sorts at that sentry box, fighting over the camp fighting in the dark, you know. They had to move him. So all the men was mad about that. But there was rackets in that camp because we were getting paid. We were getting money then. Italian, I don't know, valued as 7 or 8. It wasn't valued as much. They used to get these white boys got a crown and anchor going and all sorts in this particular camp, you know, because they used to send people go out that camp working and all sorts. And that's the camp we broke out of that camp when Italy capitulated.
So you were under tents or canvas in this camp?
We were under like a bivouac, we were, yeah. Three of us in it.
And was the weather good? Was it warm weather?
Well, it's cold in the night time, but weather, well, you know, not all that bad. Freezing. Couldn't get no hot water or anything, everything freezing, you know what I mean, but it wasn't bad.
Had you still your original uniforms on, or had they given you any?
No, we had our originals, but we had patches. They took them away and put patches in them, like a patch on your back and a patch on your arm. I forget what colour they were now, but they were all patches to say POWs, you know what I mean.
And in these...
there was a fella in there, he was building the clock in that camp. He was building his clock before we got there. And he had it going, I reckon. And he built it out of tin cans. And was keeping perfect time. And everybody used to ask him a time, and he pinned. And they were wondering what happened to that clock. I have a pamphlet about it. I believe I've seen a clock, I can't recall, but it was in that particular camp, I think.
And in the bivouacs, as I say, were you able to keep warm? Did they give you bedding?
Oh, yeah, did one blanket, I think it was. Forget, no.
Was the food any better?
Stodge the same. Once or twice a day, that's all you got. It was like hot water. We got a Red Cross parcel there. And they stopped them all of a sudden. That was between two. Oh, I think there was to be, I'm not sure, 2 ounce bar of chocolate in. And there was to be a piece of soap in. Forget no. There used to be all sorts, you know what I mean?
And you could barter this with not only prisoners, but with the guards as well.
Oh, if you got caught, you're in trouble over that, because you weren't supposed to know to do it. But to get bread, you do out, you know, survival, what they call survival. But we used to twist them, all sorts. We used to fill it with a cocoa, fill it up with dirt, and put cocoa on top. They only used to open smell it, but you'd have to watch because he used to change centuries. Because in the end, naturally, they'd get wise to it. But we've done it. I've done it myself. Two panis like that. Shut it over the wire.
A panis cakes?
Pani, no, that's what they call it, bun. Pani. Yeah. Then they used to swap them, you know.
What time would your day start? When was Reveille?
When you liked. When you felt like it. Nobody bothered you about that.
Did you have again a parade?
Yeah, we had the only time we had to be when they're counting, yeah, you know.
And would that be early on the
and
morning?
Then,
or when?
This, what do you call it, camp commander, I used to give you, have you all gathered together on this. I tried to tell you what information they did know, what was happening. You know, you got a bit of information. They got it. I don't know which. How do they got the information? Like, you know what I mean? And they told them our troops were advancing all the time. And then Italy capitulated. But down our particular camp, there were mostly fascist guards. But King Emmanuel, men threw rifles down off home, but there were still guards. And this camp commandant had us all on. He said, no, he said, this camp, I still remember what he said, this camp, he says, is now under British rule. He said, I'm in charge, I'm the camp commandant, and it's under British rule. Any attempt to break camp, he said, they'll be up for court-martial. That was with his words. And then he explained why. He said, I daren't turn men loose into the countryside. There's 2,000 or 3,000 men loose. Let them make their own way. He said they'd be raping and all, because there's some people been in them camps 5 years. And that's what his words were like. But we said, got together, 5 of us, I think there was, tonight.
Before we come to your escape, did you actually go out to work from that camp?
No, I didn't. I wouldn't.
They couldn't make you, could they not?
No, they can't, no. Do you want to know, you know when you first get interrogated, you know, what you used to do and all that? Like, if you were a farmer, you were so-and-so and so-and-so. Like her late husband, he worked on the farm, and he'd been there twice. And that particular family come to this country, my second wife, you know. Harry is dead.
Was it because down to the rank of corporal you didn't have to work?
No. It would detail like what I've just said. What you could say, I'm not going, you know.
And they wouldn't try to force you?
Not to my knowledge. They might have done beforehand. I don't know, because there's people been there a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. I don't know. I never made inquiries, I tell you the truth. You know what I mean? But they asked me would I go to want to go to work, but I said, no. They ask you that.
Did the attitude of the guards and the commandant change as the British army advanced steadily towards them?
Definitely.
This is before the actual breakdown.
Yes, they tried more friendly, put it that way. Yeah, you could see the change in them yourself, like you would yourself. Like you see Nuffel had been nasty and all of a sudden you started being nice. You know, different attitude altogether, yeah.
Had you seen any particularly cruel acts by the guards upon the men?
Not personally, myself, no, not personally. No, I didn't, you know what I mean, myself I didn't. But I reckon it was going on, but I couldn't tell you. But you seen like what you asked me before, in the previous camp, you seen two lads having a go at each other, nobody'd stop them. You know, and brutal, you know. And then shook hands after I've actually seen that happen.
That's between two prisoners?
Yeah. I've actually seen that happen. Knocked each other down to the ground and then, don't know what it was over, and then they shook hands and they went away.